Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, July the 23rd. We took a chance scheduling this topic of discussion this hour because it is one you might not want to hear about. Illegal dog fighting. But I hope you don't change channels and will participate this hour as we wonder why this crime is more widespread than we might realize. I couldn't stand to see the video of pit bulls fighting each other every time there was a news story or discussion of the indictment of Atlanta quarterback Michael Vick on charges tied to dog fighting last week. It broke my heart to see those dogs clamped onto each other's necks and to know they had been trained to kill each other and that people would participate in training these dogs to kill and would end up killing or torturing these dogs if they didn't perform, and that some people would bet money to watch these dogs rip each other apart. Why is this happening? We will find out how widespread this blood sport is and how it continues to operate despite being a felony in 48 states. Besides Vick's indictment, other dogfighting busts have occurred recently in Illinois, Texas, Virginia, and Ohio. You might recall a suspected case in Wisconsin earlier this year, where nearly 50 pit bulls were being kept at the Dane County Humane Society, being kept as evidence in this case. So what's going on here, and can this be stopped? Plus, we'll wonder if you think that Michael Vick should be suspended immediately by the NFL, despite not being convicted yet of the crimes alleged in the indictment. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email with your question or comment to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest this hour is Wayne Pacelli, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Joy.
So how widespread is this crime?
More widespread than most people have any idea of. Dogfighting has been around for an awfully long time and dates back to Europe. And frankly, people for the last 2,000 years, some people have fought animals. You go back to the days of the Roman Colosseum, crowds would fill the stadium to watch animals tear each other apart and kill one another. The two forms of animal fighting that have persisted into this day and age are dog fighting and cock fighting. You occasionally have other types of animal fighting. There's something that has cropped up in the South in recent years called hog-dog fighting, where a hog is placed in a pen, the tusks cut off, and pit bulls are sicked on the hog. But the most predominant forms are cockfighting and dogfighting, and both of them have their own dynamics. Dogfighting, traditionally, when the Humane Society of the United States was formed in the 1950s, was a rural activity with typically rural whites who were professional dogfighters and hobbyists engaged in this activity. It was pretty widespread, and at that time, not a single state in the country treated dogfighting as a felony. Since the mid-1970s, we at the Humane Society of the United States have worked methodically to upgrade penalties and ban dogfighting in every single state. And as you mentioned in your intro, it's now a felony in 48 states and banned in all 50 states. There's also a federal law that makes it a federal felony to move any animal in interstate or foreign commerce for fighting purposes. But we've seen a real surge in dogfighting in urban communities in the last 20 years. And frankly, it's been driven by this glorification of pit bulls and to some degree by fighting and rap videos and other entertainment vehicles that have popularized the breed.
Yeah. Now, it is something that I associate, at least in modern times, with the inner city underworld. But it's more than that.
No doubt about it. I mean, rural dogfighting is unfortunately very widespread. And we break kind of taxonomically the world of dogfighters into three groups. There are the professional dogfighters who pay a lot of attention to the bloodlines of the dog, who are involved in this partly as a money-making exercise. And they travel nationally, sometimes internationally. They make money on gambling, but they also make money on selling fighting dogs. If your dog does well in the pit, then you're viewed as a good breeder and trainer, and then you can sell the puppies for a higher cost. You have hobbyists who really kind of know all the dog fighters regionally and are really in it for the gambling, don't pay as much attention to the bloodlines, but are into it in a serious way. It's oftentimes their major hobby. And then finally are the street fighters, increasingly young kids associated with gangs who have pit bulls kind of as a macho display, and they stage fights with the pit bulls. And I'll just mention, Joy, that pit bulls are the predominant fighting dog. I mean, historically, certain other breeds have been used for fighting in other countries, but in the United States, the pit bull, which is technically not even a breed, is the dog of choice because they're generally 50 pounds of muscle and speed and endurance, and they don't make much noise when they fight. They keep coming, and while, you know, many dogs, historically, because of their relationship to their wild antecedents, wolves, submit at some point, these dogs will fight because of breeding to injury or to death.
We're talking with Wayne Pacelli, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, about the world of dog fighting following the indictment last week of Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick for being involved in a dog fighting ring, allegedly. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your questions and comments for our guest. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, July the 23rd. This afternoon, between 4 and 6, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. After 4 o'clock this afternoon, Ben will talk politics with political scientist Cal Gilson. It's coming up after 4. We're talking about dogfighting and why this crime exists and what can be done about it. We are talking with Wayne Pacelli, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Before we go to the phones, Wayne Pacelli, I wanted to ask you about this protest that was staged outside the NFL headquarters, I think it was on Friday, demanding the suspension, immediate suspension of Michael Vick. It says here that this was organized by PETA and some people from the Humane Society carrying signs saying, you know, sack Michael Vick now. Do you believe that Michael Vick should be suspended immediately before this thing goes through the courts over this indictment?
Yes, Joy, we do, and for a variety of reasons. One, we have been involved in this case for a while in terms of providing information. We have informants within the industry. We spend a lot of time gathering intelligence, and we have heard for some time about the possible involvement of Mr. Vick in the world of dogfighting. Also, the case that has been basically affirmed by a grand jury in U.S. District Court and brought forth by federal prosecutors is extremely detailed. And also, at the very least, and we this is pretty incontrovertible, we know that Michael Vick's property in Surry County, Virginia, was used as a dogfighting venue. There was the main house, which some of your listeners may have seen on television, Big White House, but behind it were four structures where dogfights took place, where kennels were constructed, where there was even a makeshift hospital for the animals. And the federal government exhumed, I believe it was 17 bodies of dogs from the property. So there's no doubt at the very least that on that property major dogfighting activities were occurring. The case is ultimately to be resolved by the courts, but we see precedent with the police and with the White House and a lot of other publicly responsible positions of suspension until the case is solved. We're very concerned that Michael Vick is a role model for millions of children across the country, and to allow him to suit up with this shadow over him, we think sends absolutely the wrong signal. We think he should be suspended pending the outcome of the trial.
Yeah, and again, as you mentioned, the courts will ultimately decide this, but I wonder if you've you've given some thought as to why someone as successful as Michael Vick, who, you know, has, you know, a gazillion dollars in endorsements and this lucrative contract would be involved in such a business with quotes?
Well, Joy, you know, wealth and notoriety are never an antidote to stupidity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we see all sorts of behavior by people who have a great deal going for them and who squander it with actions that are mystifying, to say the least. You know, I can only speculate that why people are into dogfighting. I mean, I've given it a lot of thought also with cockfighting. You know, why are there so many people involved, tens of thousands of people in this country, involved in staged fights where they're interested in the wagering and thrilled by the bloodletting of the enterprise? I do think that some of these folks are really fascinated by the animals. I mean, they are extraordinary animals, whether they're roosters and cockfights or pit bulls in dogfights. I mean, they're powerful animals, they're fast, they're athletes, and I think that the fighters actually have an appreciation for them at some kind of distant level, not an appreciation as in an affection that they really care about them, but an appreciation. And it's a competitive sport in their mind, and they simply think it's fun to watch animals do this to one another. Now, of course, for most people, they're appalled by the idea that animals would be tormented and even tortured, you know, over tens of minutes or even hours. The longest documented dogfight lasted about 5.5 hours. You know, and animals, sometimes both animals perish in the fight, sometimes not immediately, but from shock or from blood loss. And, you know, I think that certain people get into this and their friends kind of get them introduced to the activity, and they develop an affinity for it. But it's it will be an age-old question why people like this. You can go back again to Roman times. Why did people like to see these staged fights in the Colosseum?
Yeah. To the phones we go. Mike in Fond du Lac is with us first. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for the guest for appearing on the program. I'm kind of curious to know what the guest thinks about these breed-specific laws and the extent to which this, you know, dogfighting, which, you know, usually involves the pit bulls, the extent to which these breed-specific laws, which in a lot of states, I think Minnesota even has banned pit bulls completely, or is entertaining, you know, some kind of state law to ban them. Lots of counties and jurisdictions ban pit bulls. Is dogfighting, can we assume that dogfighting in general and some of the attacks that we see on kids, you know, the unfortunate attacks with bad dog owners that teach your dogs this stuff, is that what's kind of causing these breed-specific laws? And what does the guest think about, you know, these breed-specific laws with pit bulls?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good question, and it's a very vibrant subject at the local, county, and sometimes even, as the caller mentions, the state level, because there are a couple of issues. I mean, one is the prevalence of dogfighting, and if you can stop people from having pit bulls, you can presumably attack that problem. The second issue is, are certain breeds more dangerous to people, and are they involved in more attacks? So those are a couple of the motivations, I think, with the latter one being the prime motivation. Generally speaking, the Humane Society of the U.S. opposes breed-specific bans for a few reasons. One, they're generally difficult to enforce. I mean, what if you have a mix of a pit bull and a German Shepherd or a pit bull and any other species? How do you determine, you know, what breed type that animal is? Second, if the animals are properly socialized and if they're not bred for, you know, extra aggression as the dogfighting dogs are, they can make wonderful and suitable companions. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of perfectly well-socialized, not dangerous pit bulls in the country. That said, I really do believe that the pit bull is the most abused dog type in this country, and there is, you know, a bit of seduction to the idea of banning pit bulls, at the very least to alleviate the problems that they face. But generally speaking, the breed bans don't work. The historical record shows that certain breed types have been involved in more attacks on kids and adults because they're favored by the wrong sorts of folks, the folks that don't care about them, folks that turn them into weapons. When I was a kid, it was German Shepherds, mm-hmm. and then it was Doberman Pinschers, and then it was Rottweilers. You know, now you don't really see any problems with German Shepherds or Dobermans because the breeding has been better, and they're not being bred for those aggressive characteristics. Unfortunately, the wrong people, in the sense that people who want the animals not for companionship but want them for aggression as kind of a macho display or for fighting are drawn to them, and that spawns many of the problems.
Thank you, Mike, for the call. Victor in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Victor.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guests. Mm-hmm. And I have a reason why people are the way they are when they had these animals, pets, or whatever fighting animal it is. You're dealing with a society that is becoming more and more callous and mean-spirited. And you look at, really, I wish somebody would do an analysis of people who have these animals and why would they use them as a weapon. One of the reasons is it's about power. You got a lot of people who are going through low esteem, no sense of power, so it gets manifested in watching other animals and even people beat themselves up. So that's one of your reasons. And as far as Michael Vick is concerned, I believe the NFL is going to definitely suspend him because this is ruining the image of the NFL. And like you mentioned, you know, a lot of people look up to him as a role model, and it's an evil, so the NFL is going to do something rather drastic to deal with this. So because if they don't do anything, other people are going to get caught up in this and repeat that action. Another problem I would point out is it's not just Michael Vick. This has been going on for a long time. You're going to have to come after the parents because this is a generational thing. It's a cultural thing.
Well, those are all really good observations, and you're right. I think that, you know, Michael Vick or any other person who may be involved in dogfighting, it doesn't happen in isolation. You know, there are influences, whether they're parental or peers, that act upon these people and draw them into this world. And it's a dead-end street for any kid who pursues this. And I think that's one of our messages. You know, this is a felony in almost every state in the nation. It's a federal felony. You're going to get in serious trouble if this is your hobby. Stay away from it. I think the caller's point about violence are very much on the mark. We see all across the country when we're involved in dogfighting cases that the folks involved in this are often not just involved in this single criminal activity. We often see it associated with narcotics traffic, violence against people, et cetera. I mean, if you can do this to a dog, if you can enjoy watching dogs tear each other apart and be thrilled by it, are you the sort of person that we want in a community? Are you the sort of person that's going to obey all the laws of society, act well to your neighbor? Generally not. I mean, you can't compartmentalize this behavior that much. You know, the principle of violence and harmful behavior, you know, it's indivisible. If you're going to do this to an animal, you may do it to a person, and it's a dangerous activity. Mm-hmm. That's why society should not tolerate in any way, shape, or manner.
We're talking with Wayne Pacelli, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. We're talking about the brutal world of professional, illegal dogfighting following the indictment of Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick on charges of being involved in a dogfighting ring. We'll continue after we check the latest news. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Monday, July the 23rd. Several dozen animal rights protesters staged a demonstration outside the National Football League headquarters on Friday, demanding the immediate suspension of Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick. Vick was indicted last week on charges of dogfighting. Protesters organized by People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals and the Humane Society carried signs bearing Vick's number 7 with a red circle and a slash through it. They chanted, "Sack Michael Vick." The league has said that Vick deserves his day in court before any action is taken. Protesters say there's enough information in the federal indictment to suspend Vick right now. We are talking about the case of illegal dogfighting involving Michael Vick. We are talking about the world of dog fighting in general, discussing how widespread this is, and wondering if there's anything more that can be done to ban dog fighting. It is banned. It is a felony in 48 states. Why does this continue? And besides the Vic case, there have been some busts in other states recently, Illinois, Texas, Virginia, Ohio. There was a suspected case of dog fighting, or at least a dog fighting ring, suspected in Wisconsin earlier this year. About 50 pit bulls were kept at the Dane County Humane Society as evidence in this case. Eventually, a plea bargain in that case, the dog fighting charges were dropped. But what do you think? What questions do you have about this? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Wayne Pacelli, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. And our next caller is Dwight in Black River Falls. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Mr. Pacelli. My statement in question pertains to what I perceive as somewhat of a hypocrisy by PETA and the Humane Society. And I in no way condone dog fighting or cock fighting or, you know, any kind of animal cruelty in this way. But when human fighting is sanctioned and is probably legal in the same 48 states that dog fighting is criminalized in, in my youth when I attended boxing matches, you know, I would look around in the stands and see, you know, the spectators in the stands boxing each other, and you go outside and the spectators are out there fighting. And, I see your zeal as being important, but by limiting it only to animals and not protesting humans, I think, tacitly sanctions human fightings and by extension even wars. And I'll hang up and listen to your comments off the air.
Well, again, thanks for the comment. I can't speak for PETA. PETA is a very different group than the Humane Society of the United States, but our organization has a specific mission to help animals and to prevent cruelty. Mm-hmm. And we are chartered, for that purpose. Now, you know, as I mentioned before, I think that violence to animals often spawns violence to people. But with the idea of organized animal fighting and comparing that to boxing or other forms of human fighting, there are a few key differences. One, the animals are conscripted to fight. I mean, the humans volunteer. Second, there are rules, generally speaking, on the human fighting. I mean, boxers have gloves on, and the referee can stop a fight when someone's being harmed. It's not a fight to injury, or certainly not to death. Dog fighting and cock fighting are fights to the death. I mean, the roosters in cock fights have knives attached to their legs, and they hack each other to death in the pit. And then, of course, the dogs are equipped with these, very sharp teeth and powerful jaws, and they kill each other in this way. So I see them, differently in many respects, largely because of the voluntary nature and the rules imposed. There are no rules there are rules in dog fighting. There's a referee, but typically it's an acceptable outcome for the animal to kill another animal or for both animals to die.
Dwight, thanks for the call. The two states where it's not a felony, I think it's Idaho and Wyoming?
Yes, Idaho and Wyoming.
What's going on there?
Well, we've tried to get felony provisions banned, and you'd be amazed at the stubbornness of lawmakers, either denigrating the idea of protecting animals from cruelty, not treating it in a serious way, or frankly having some sympathy for the idea that, they're just animals. And frankly, there in Wisconsin, we have one of the biggest apologists for animal fighting at the federal level, Jim Sensenbrenner, the former chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, for the last 6 years was the person who thwarted the advance of federal animal fighting legislation. He stood in the way of it. The Senate had voted unanimously to make it a federal felony to move dogs or birds for fighting purpose in interstate commerce. And the bill last year in the U.S. House of Representatives had 324 co-sponsors. There are 435 members of the House. Three-quarters of the House of Representatives members had publicly aligned themselves with this bill, and Sensenbrenner, as chairman of the committee, stood in the way and wouldn't pass it. So many lawmakers went to him and said, please pass this bill, anticipating exactly the circumstances in the Vick case, where animals are transported over state lines, where it's a criminal syndicate involved in dogfighting. And he was the problem. And, you know, you ask him, you know, why, and he just comes up with really...
Well, he says there's more important things to do.
Yeah, more important things to do. I mean, there's always something more important to do in Congress. You know, I mean, if the Congress just spent all of its time on the Iraq War, it wouldn't attend to any other business. You could argue that's more important than anything else. You know, the Congress has a job to do in general. Here we had an issue that demanded attention, that so many lawmakers had documented was a problem in terms of violence in our communities, other criminal activities. In the case of cockfighting, the spread of bird flu by cockfighting birds, and Sensenbrenner was the impediment for years.
Yeah. Now, that bill did eventually pass.
It did pass after the Democrats took control of the House. Sensenbrenner was removed as chairman, and the new chairman of the Judiciary Committee moved the legislation rapidly.
Was there anything else that you think needs to be done, even with these laws making it a felony, or now this new one that we just talked about? Obviously, it's still going on. Is there anything more that could or should be done?
Well, I think we all need to be eyes and ears in our communities to alert law enforcement to this problem. If you see someone with lots of pit bulls and they're, you know, staked on chains, and if they're exhibiting aggressive behavior, let your animal control agency or local humane society know, so we can all be part of that solution. I mean, urging law enforcement to take action against these cases, treating these matters seriously, and I think law enforcement is doing a better and better job, and the folks in law enforcement, you know, really are treating animal cruelty like the crime. It should be considered. And there are some laws in the states that are weak. Wisconsin's law is pretty strong, but a number of states have no ban on possession of fighting animals, no ban on being a spectator at a fight, and many of the good state statutes do that. There's now even a move in Congress to further strengthen this federal law, which was just signed into law by the president in May, and we'll see how that goes. So I hope that the Vick case, as terrible as it is and unfortunate for everyone involved, does, you know, bring this ugly world of dogfighting out of the shadows and into the public gaze. And we can see that certain people think that animals are just things. They think of them as just instruments, in this case, fighting animals. And I hope, in the larger sense, the work of the Humane Society of the United States is designed to have people think of animals as living, feeling creatures that deserve respectful treatment, and they shouldn't just be thought of as things for us to use in any way that we want, especially not in this gratuitous way where animals are used just to titillate people in staged fights.
Linda in Highland is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. My question has to do with the case that just came up in Dane County, where there were 50 or so dogs that were held for a long time. I'm not sure whether they were destroyed. But in the end, there was a plea bargain, and this person probably served no time at all. And I'm afraid, I feel the same thing will happen in this current case. And it's great to have a humane society, and it's great to have the laws on the books, but if all we're going to do is make deals once people are arrested, then what is the use? You know, why are we talking about it when in the end they'll probably plea bargain and obtain a fine and nothing else?
What about the penalties part of this, Wayne Pacelli?
Well, that's why we're advocating for stronger penalties, and why, you know, we were just mystified, frankly, at Sensenbrenner's efforts to block this. And, you know, if Sensenbrenner had not blocked this legislation for years, Vick would have had more felony charges and would have had potentially a stronger penalty. But he got a great assist from Sensenbrenner in his obstructionist efforts. In general, though, I will tell you, don't be too pessimistic about this. You know, we're seeing more and more folks prosecuted for animal cruelty crimes and doing time. A guy in South Carolina got a huge sentence. He was a leader in the dogfighting world. We're seeing more and more folks really serving time for animal abuse, and that's proper and right, because a message needs to be sent. If people just get a slap on the wrist, they're going to continue this behavior. And frankly, we know from the sociological literature that, especially with just malicious acts of cruelty, that people who are encouraged to do that again, they often do graduate to people. Their violent tendencies then revert to the human community.
Talking with Wayne Pacelli, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, about illegal dog fighting following the indictment of Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick on dog fighting charges. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. It's now 12 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Monday, July the 23rd. Coming up after 7, it's our State Capitol Report. We'll be welcoming in the leaders of the Wisconsin Republican and Democratic parties to talk about, maybe debate a little bit, how they would reconcile the separate versions of the state budget, the Democratic-controlled state Senate and the Republican-controlled state assembly have passed two very different versions of how Wisconsin should fund services over the next couple of years, and we'll talk about which one's better. Coming up after 7 o'clock. Talking about dog fighting for the rest of this hour and the charges against Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick, the allegations drew an emotional speech last week from West Virginia Senator Robert Byrd. He shouted barbaric several times in the Senate chambers on Thursday, fighting back tears as he spoke about the charges filed against Vick and three others.
The hottest places in hell are reserved for the souls of sick and brutal people who hold God's creatures in such brutal and cruel contempt.
Byrd in his speech said he wouldn't prejudge the men, but added that he is sure that the hottest places in hell are reserved for those involved in such activities. His shouting startled a few tourists, but drew appreciation from Massachusetts Senator Edward Kennedy and a few other people in the chamber. What's your reaction to what Robert Byrd had to say, Wayne Pacelli?
Oh, well, Senator Byrd has been a great friend of the Humane Society of the United States for many years. He's a man who... really, a lot of his compassion for animals derives from his religious conviction that for him it's really not a matter of animal rights or animal welfare, it's a matter of human responsibility, and that all of, as he says, God's creatures deserve respectful treatment by people. And he has helped do so many things at the federal level to help animals. So we love Senator Byrd and his advocacy for animals. We think he's a great ally of ours.
Gene in Green Bay is with us next. Hi, Gene. You're on the air.
Thank you. Okay, I do not condone the fighting of animals. I disagree with that very much because my dog is one of my best friends. But I heard a senator speak on the radio about that issue of the dogs. He spoke so vehemently. I've never heard anyone speak that way against abuses of children.
You're talking about Senator Byrd, that clip we just played.
Probably was him, yes.
Yeah.
Well, and I agree. I love animals. They're my, as I said, my best friends. But.
Yeah.
Well, let me just say on the issue of children and animals, you know, the first major organization devoted to animals had a dual mission of protecting children and protecting animals. I mean, there was, in the 19th century, a linkage between them because it was basically... The inappropriate exercise of human power over the less powerful, whether it was children or animals. So the history of the humane movement has been a history of concern for the weak against the strong. So I see the issues as very closely tied.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Jean. Ellen in Brookfield is with us. Hi, Ellen. You're on the air.
Good morning. I've heard some, not very many people, make comments about, well, these dogs are, you know, they're bred for this, and this is something almost that they enjoy. And, you know, so this specific breed is kind of okay. But people have to know that these dogs aren't trained for killing on other expensive killing dogs. They are trained to kill by the use of smaller dogs, more gentle dogs who are large and can take a lot of fighting on them before they die. It is not uncommon for dogs to be stolen from people's backyards, for other dogs to be bred to be used for the training of fighting dogs. golden retrievers, Labrador retrievers, dogs of that type who are large enough to be able to be chewed on for a long time and who will fight back but aren't aggressive enough to fight back in a way that they actually damage the fighting dog. And even if they were aggressive enough, they don't have the jaws to do it. And so this is not something that just affects these fighting type of dogs. This is something that the crime surrounding all of this, the various type of crime of the stealing of dogs, of cats, of a lot of other animals are used in the training of this. And the people have got to think about somebody who enjoys this type of thing as a sport. What does that sort of person do to their own children? I mean, if they are so inured to pain and violence, we've got to think about the leap from animal to others with this.
And that you've brought that up, Wayne Pacelli.
But I think the caller's referring to these bait animals. You know, sometimes the animals, let's face it, number one, they're bred for aggression. You have people in the dogfighting industry who are selecting for behavior characteristics to make them more of a fighting animal, and then they train them to be aggressive. And one of the ways is by having bait animals, smaller animals that they can kill and get a taste for blood. And then what happened in the Vic case, according to the indictment also, is there's something called off the chain. The first time the dog is brought into a pit, they're so-called tested, and they're taken off the chain. It's just a term within the industry. And if the dog doesn't perform well in that so-called game test, then the dog fighters often kill that animal. And that's what happened in the mm-hmm. Vic case, according to the indictment, that animals that did not perform well in a 5 or 6 minute bout just to test them have a wet towel on them, they electrocute them, they hung them, they grab them by the back legs, and they slam them against the ground to bludgeon them to death. I mean, and unfortunately, this is not extremely unusual in the dogfighting world. This is how they treat animals who don't test well.
Yeah, I can't understand a lot of this, but what's the point of that? You can't waste any money on a dog that's not going to be a champion?
This is a fighting machine. You know, mm-hmm. you have them to fight. You don't have them for companionship. You don't have them for any other reason but fighting. And, you know, you've got X number of spots in your kennel, mm-hmm. and you're going to feed X number of animals, and I don't want this one because this dog's not going to do well. You'll just breed another one. And then you can see if that animal has more gameness or more toughness.
Yeah. And we do hear about humane societies. Now, the Dane County Humane Society did have all these pit bulls back earlier this year when there was the allegations of a dog fighting ring or at least activities going on. But other humane societies just say that they're just experiencing a big increase in pit bulls being surrendered or, I guess, being strays, and they have the telltale signs of dogfighting.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the other collateral costs of dogfighting. I mean, if you have a dogfighting investigation, you confiscate dogs. It's often the local humane societies, private institutions, or local or county-run institutions that have to hold these animals for evidentiary purposes, often for months. And when you look at all of the aggregate costs of this to local humane societies and local government across the country, it's tens of billions of dollars to hold these animals. And in the larger sense, in terms of the pit bull epidemic in this country, urban communities, 70% in some local humane societies of the dogs are pit bulls because they're seen as some instrument, and then people discard them or they relinquish them when they are done with them, and then it falls upon the local humane society to deal with the problem and clean up this mess. And again, that's why we advocate for spaying and neutering. We advocate for responsible pet care, and we don't want people to obtain animals for any purpose other than, you know, companionship and for legitimate purposes.
Yeah. Next, we go to David in Reedstown. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hello. I appreciate what you're doing with this dog problem, but I do find it a little bit hypocritical and curious that as we speak, and everybody loves their dogs and cats and whatnot, but millions of animals are in cruel, inhumane confinement as we speak. on their way to the meat markets, to your grocery store, where probably 95% of what you see on the shelves has been raised and tortured, never gone outside.
Yeah. We have less than a minute to go, David. Why do we care maybe more about dogs fighting and killing each other and people torturing dogs than we do about factory farming?
Well, we as the Humane Society of the United States are very concerned about both. Today our subject is dogfighting.
Mm-hmm.
Many other days my subject is factory farming. So people can go to our website, www.humanesociety.org, and learn about the wide range of animal problems in this country, and factory farming is among them. Dogs are the closest companions, you know, that we have, and I think that the vile nature of the cruelty is something that really stimulates action, but it's not the only problem, and humans have a larger set of responsibilities to animals, and we should be good to them.
We'll leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Wayne Pacelli, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. Thanks to Karen Prager for producing The Hour and to Christina Taylor for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.